Sports. Wine. Life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cos podcast. I'm Matt Cos. That's Bob Mackowitz. It's 9:47 on a Monday, sunny day here in Southern Ontario, Toronto. I don't know why, Bob. I just decided to do like a radio intro sort of thing.
Local radio.
Yeah, that's right.
Or it could be local TV. Everybody on local TV is always so happy.
They really are. That's a skill, especially for the morning people, the morning ones who do it. Because, you know, they're up at like 4 in the morning, 3:45. You're up before farmers. It is a level of skill to do that and have any sort of energy.
I have a theory.
Yeah.
And you and I have both done morning radio.
Yes.
So we understand this. I think it's great to get up early, but don't be cocky.
Mm-hmm.
Wait for the sun.
Yeah.
There's no need for you to be up before the sun. Who are you to say, hey, sun, you want to see how active I am?
Yeah.
I'm getting up before you.
And on top of that, for anyone listening right now, if you have friends or family that have a job that they have to wake up really early and they tell you one day how early they wake up, don't respond with, oh my God, I would kill myself. I would literally, I would kill myself if I have to get up that early. I remember hearing that when, like, the Richard Show, when we started at 5:30 for some stupid reason, and I would tell people one time I would get up in the morning, and they would say that. I'm like, hey, I'm actually the one doing the thing that you believe would lead to suicide. So just dial back.
People would always say to me, I couldn't do it. And I would always say the same thing back. Yes, you could.
Mm-hmm.
You just wouldn't like it.
Yeah.
Which is exactly how all of us felt about it was, yeah, you can do it. You can get, I remember Aaron Korolnik, our producer, who's now the morning show guy on.
Mm-hmm.
Man, he's been doing mornings for 10 years, I guess.
Long time.
But, oh, someone's calling. Who's calling, Matt?
I don't know. It's not a call. It's a, I don't know.
Did you set yourself a reminder?
No.
You know what it is? It's, you know, when you get like memories of photos they send you back. Like,
you get a sound alert, though?
Bob, this is not going to shock you.
Okay, I see.
When it comes to the settings for my phone, I have no idea. I just leave it on mute. I just leave it on. Like, I cannot do the thing where one thing is one notification, another one has a different volume level. Amy hates it when my group of friends in our WhatsApp group, when they start going and then it's just ping, ping, and there's 17 messages.
Do you remember when we used to do the show on Skype during COVID?
Yes.
And I didn't know how to turn off the notifications on my laptop.
Yes. Actually, Aaron Korolnik specifically brought that up. He's like, it's so annoying.
It was really rude for me not to learn how to do it. Okay, but I'm in a great mood.
Yeah.
How many streetcars did it take me to get here today, Matt?
Oh, God. Okay. You know what? I'm in an optimistic mood. One. It took you one streetcar.
One streetcar.
Nice.
You know what it was like, Matt? It was like when you go and you shop at the grocery store and you've got a bunch of bags and you figure out how to carry them all and mm-hmm. you can get them in the house in one trip.
Oh, the one tripper.
It was a one tripper. I got a fun show for us to do today. It's kind of it's what we usually do, but it's set up a little differently. But before we do that, I want to make an observation about aging, and I want to start off with an apology to Jeff Pollock.
Okay.
So Jeff, I guess, was listening to the show
mm-hmm.
the other day.
And our lawyer, jeffpollock.com. That's Jeff with a G. jeffpollock.com. If you need lawyer help, legal help, even stuff like with tax season coming up, like he's got connections. And I mean that in a good way, not in a shady way. So jeffpollock.com. It's, I believe, his wife.
His best friends with Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah, exactly.
You can trust him.
Yeah, and the interpreter. That's a wild story. But anyway, jeffpollock.com. If you need legal help, he's been our lawyer for years now, and it's a nice thing to know. I don't have to worry about lawyers.
So a couple pods ago, I mentioned, I got to reach out to Jeff. I haven't talked to him in a long time. Now, park that. Put a pin in it for a second.
Okay.
Do you remember how we were going to do the pod on Friday, but I said I couldn't because I was taking a medication. It was making me groggy.
Yeah.
I have problems with insomnia. And my doctor said, well, try this. And it was, I take a couple pills before I go to bed. It's a daily thing. And I'm learning how to do it. And I'm a bit like the princess and the pea when it comes to medication. If it says it's going to do something, it does that and more.
Oh.
So it said it could make you groggy in the morning. And I woke up and I said, oh, man, I'm just too groggy. So I sent you a text. I said, no, I got to figure this out. I'm a little burnt here. So we push the pot off. So about 20 minutes after I sent that text, I fall back asleep and the phone rings shortly thereafter.
Mm.
And it's a number I don't recognize, but my wife's away And I thought, well, I got to run the house. No one else is going to pick this up. It could be important. I better answer. And I'm like, hello. And then on the other end, hey there, it's Jeff Pollock. And it's nice to catch you. Remember, I was supposed to do your will and all happy inside, but all I can't understand anything that's coming at me. So I'm quiet for a second. And then all of a sudden I just go, who's Jeff Follett?
Oh no, really?
I called him Jeff. I felt like Jesus. My mother, yeah. Felt like my angry mother when the doorbell rings and she's like, who the hell is that?
Yeah, people do get angry at that. Yes, okay, so you're giving a formal...
Jeff Follett.
Yes, yeah. To Jeff Follett, Pollock, and anyone in between.
Yeah, I apologize to Jeff Pollock. That was really nice of you to call. I've sorted out the proper dosage,
and I will
call you back shortly. But this gets me to what I wanted to say about aging. This is what I learned. So I get my one trip on the way here, and I'm about to come into your place. And you know when the sidewalk, when there's a lot of construction, the area of the sidewalk narrows?
Yes.
And so you kind of have to be strategic if there's more than one person using the same patch of sidewalk. There's an older lady, and by older, I'm being generous. She kind of looks like, Sam Raimi's Drag Me to Hell?
Yes.
Yeah, she kind of looks like the witch in
there. Okay, yeah.
But she got a yoga mat on her shoulder. Mm-hmm. And so I'm trying to, I'm doing the dance where I'm trying to figure how do I get around her? Because I don't want to scare her. She's an older lady. I don't want to be like, excuse me, or whatever. I don't want to surprise her. So I'm kind of doing the dance for 5 seconds, 10 seconds. And she turns around, and it's clear that I'm trying to be polite and work around her.
Oh.
And she just shoots me a death glare.
Really?
Shoots me a death glare like, the fuck are you doing?
You're trying to get...
I'm standing here.
But you were being polite. You were trying to get around her.
So this is the thing, Matt. And this is what I realized the gift of age is. Because we always say the gift of age is wisdom. But is it? Are older people really that much wiser than you or I or someone in their 20s? Like how much has this wisdom cascaded down through their ages and turned them into these... greater beings like that we aspire to become one day? Like, does that really happen?
I think there is more wisdom, just because more accumulation of experience. But to your point, I think what you're getting to is not only do you get a discount at everything, the senior discount, you get to just be an asshole and you don't care. Give a shit meter. You don't care.
The gift of age is not wisdom. Mm-hmm. It's anger.
Yes.
You're allowed to be angry whenever the fuck you want for whatever reason you want. And no one can tell you you're wrong.
And on top of that, it's the gift of casual racism where... everything goes quiet for a half second as all your other family members quietly go, listen, we're just going to move on. We're going to plow on from that joke comment line and just move on.
Yeah. Yeah. That kind of quasi benign, always a little uncomfortable racism.
But it's like, well, they no longer are in charge of hiring people, loaning someone money, you know, or anything to do with real estate. So I'm going to let Graham just say that line and we're all going to just move on with our lives.
All right. So speaking of moving on, this is actually a good segue for the show I wanted to do, because I was putting together some topics over the weekend and I thought we're in a weird space right now, sports wise, because if you're a Raptors fan, you're just waiting for the season to end.
Yep.
The Jays are going to start soon, but it's too soon to be excited about opening day.
Also, I don't care about the Blue Jays. I have no excitement about them.
And we'll get to that.
Yeah.
And with the Leafs, you know, they had a big weekend. And yeah. But really, it's just about the playoffs. So we're either in a period of not waiting or of not caring or waiting.
Yes. Right?
So I thought to myself, why don't you and I do a show about a topic? And the topic that sprang to mind was emotions. Feelings, where I come up with questions and each one of them is tied to a specific feeling, and then we discuss the idea.
I love it. It's a perfect timing for it, because yes, you are right. Right now, if you're doing sports radio in Toronto, you want to do massive emotion or big picture stuff, you got to manufacture it. Unless Shohei Ohtani is the next Pete Rose, today is a slow day in the news cycle.
All right, so why don't we start here, okay? The story right now, the first emotion is anger.
Mm-hmm.
What is the story in sports right now that makes you the most angry?
It's the Oakland A's, and that might seem like such a hipster answer, but I think it's partially because that city, they don't have any more professional teams. And the owner of the Oakland A's never wanted to keep them there. Basically, he just watched Major League and said, huh, that's a good idea. They never spend money. They make the playoffs a couple of years ago, And then they start spending less money. And then they blame the fans. You know, oh, no one is showing up. When they've done everything they can to just put out a shit product. I feel bad for the players because they're going to have to play home games in the greatest amount of apathy they'll ever have in their professional careers. So the guy whose family started Gap, or The Gap, I don't know. I think there's a The. Just like that owner, fuck that guy. And like, if it's funny, you send me a text, what story is making you the angriest? And because, you know, Kevin Durant isn't first in the West or Harden isn't first in the West, I'm like, what's really making me angry? And then I'm like, that story. I hate owners like that.
It's a great one. And I remember when I was a kid, and I was probably too young to really understand it, but I remember the story of when the Baltimore Colts went to Indianapolis and the stories of, or was it Baltimore?
Yeah. It was Baltimore went to,
it was Art Modell.
Yeah.
And the midnight trucks.
Yeah.
Like no one saw it coming. And then all of a sudden the trucks came at midnight and people were outraged and shocked. And scandalized.
Wait, no. That was Irsay's. Modell, Art Modell did that when Cleveland left for a while.
Okay,
thank you. But anyway, it's the same thing. All right. NFL owners being assholes.
So, but the thing was, people were scandalized by this. You know, how could this happen? We talked about the death of a community. It's funny, all this community stuff comes up in so many different ways. Factories leave a community, or sports teams leave a community, and people are left wondering, like, what holds us together? Point I'm trying to get at here, though, is we don't even get outraged anymore. You know, the mill closed down. Learn how to code.
Yeah.
You know, your sports team leaves. Shouldn't have got season's tickets. Like, we're chumps for being loyal. We're chumps for being loyal to the place of work when they are basically telling us, well, we'll fuck you if we can, but we'd love it if you were loyal to us. And then the sports teams, like in Toronto, we have, like, our teams aren't going anywhere.
No.
But they have been so costed out of our lives that sometimes you have to feel a little dumb for following this stuff. Like when I was a kid, my mom's best friend had season's tickets to Maple Leaf Gardens. And every once in a while, we would get Grays. She would give me and my dad tickets. So we sat up in the Graves and Grays. And every year, I probably saw 4 or 5 Leafs games live. You know, it's like we were, you know, lower middle class family. And we saw, you know, you could go to the Jays and get $1 tickets at Dominion.
Yeah.
You need fucking credit check to buy tickets now. It's ridiculous. And to your point, what I find so insulting about the Oakland A's thing is it makes a mockery of loyalty. So what's the point?
About the Oakland side, you're right. It makes a mockery on every level, on the fan level, on the player level. When it comes to the price of tickets, you know, it's like everything else. You know, the price of food, everything's going up. But it's gone up so much in sports. And I think one of the infuriating things is we know how rich these owners are. We know that just by them owning a team, it's going to go up in value. Like they have an investment that is 100% going to make them money if they ever have to sell the team.
And I would go, and I don't know particularly what their stadium history is, but we know that in general, sports teams get tons of tax breaks.
Yes. They get tons.
You could sit there and say, well, it's a private business. And if it's not going here as well as you'd like, you can go somewhere else. And that's true. But keep your hands off my fucking taxes then. Because if my taxes are going to you because you are strictly here to build something within the community, like it's amazing to me sometimes. So people say like, I don't want to see my taxes get wasted on stupid things. Oh, yeah. But we'll build the Edmonton Oilers a new arena.
Yeah.
Oh, because I like the Oilers. Well, then the Oilers better stay. There's an obligation there for it. Or at the very least, Pay the money back with interest to the city.
You just wish, and this is the pie in the sky sort of naive side of me. It's like everyone in sports, everyone involved within the machine, you're all making a ton of money. Is there something you could do to give back to the community beyond having one practice at Nathan Phillips Square? Like it'll never be the way it was when you got to go to 5 or 6 games in the Grays. If you went to 5 or 6, even in the high section at ACC up there, that's going to cost you thousands of dollars.
The problem is, Matt, it's short-term thinking. There's two problems here, and they're both the problems of, you asked me last pod, what's late-stage capitalism?
Mm-hmm.
We're in it now because of these two problems. The first one is short-term thinking, where instead of saying, well, if I made that investment and I returned in Q3, maybe slightly less profit, but I was investing it back into my product in R&D, and R&D is like, okay, well, maybe we'll just do a bit more in the community, or maybe we'll have one section where the tickets are a bit cheaper. Anything, anything really. But the problem is no one gets rewarded in the corporate suites for what might happen 20 years from now.
Right.
It is short-term thinking. Q3 has to be bigger than Q2. And if it's not bigger than Q1, I'm out of a job. So you and I, who live this year to year, decade to decade, are watching our products being run by corporate owners who are living from quarter to quarter. We have totally different mandates. So that's one problem. I forgot what the second one is, but that one's big enough that we can stick with that.
Yeah. By the way, I was trying to figure out a way to, you said R&D. I'm like R&D, and then I was going to try to make a D&D joke, but you know what? There was nothing there.
And I are probably closer to D&D than R&D.
I'd wave some jazz hands. I'd say Gary Gygax, and then we would move on. But
you know, it's like stock buybacks with big companies. Mm. They get a little bit of money, like Bell will go and buy back some of its stock because that raises, you know, it's great for the shareholders if we buy back stock, and it's great for the compensation packages of the executives. And then they fire a bunch of people because they say we don't have enough profit. The idea, and this was the point I wanted to make, is the Oakland A's are like not making as much money as they could.
Yes.
That's totally true. But how much are they supposed to make? How much are any of these things supposed to make? The answer is, if it's not making as much as it can, then it is not living up to its potential.
I have this image that if I was an owner, I'm like, are we making profit? Yeah. Could we make more? Yeah. But we're making profit. I'm like, okay, I'm owning a team. I'm enjoying my life. You know, at some point it's like, there's only so much money you can make.
But it's stupid, Matt. Excuse me. It's stupid because it's short-term thinking yet again. You and I are never going anywhere.
No.
We grew up with this stuff. We will die and be buried. You'll be buried in a Giants jersey, mm-hmm. and I will have a Raptors scarf wrapped around my black suit in the casket. Right? We're not going anywhere. But Cece, my daughter, and her friends, and the world they're growing up in, a bunch of them will. Like, they won't need this as much because they're not as closely connected to it. And then their kids, who have never seen a game and maybe don't want to spend top dollar for some, like, it's going to become more and more of a luxury item, which means you're going to start pricing the average person out more and more. And I'm not talking 5 years. I'm talking 30 years, 40 years. In 1950, the biggest sport in America was horse racing.
What will arenas look like?
Will arenas look like anything? Yeah. Or will it just be like the bubble?
Will arenas? Yeah, it's a good point. Like, sometimes when I'm watching a game, like, I remember once just looking on Ticketmaster or whatever, just whatever the most rudimentary ticket site was for, all right, let's see, a decent ticket, you know, in the golds, but, you know, far back, 15 rows back, not right in center court. And there's still like, and it was like a Wednesday game. It was like $400 a ticket. And I just remember thinking, who can afford this? You know, like, I'm doing well enough, but I'm like, that's way out of my league. And then I look around, I'm like, who are the people that can afford all this? And then my next thought is how much in debt is everyone in? That's, you know, it's funny. I go there soon after. Also, because when I hear about how much it costs to put a kid in dance camp for a month, or what March break camp is, I'm like, oh my God, is everyone millionaires?
You know what brought this into sharp relief for a lot of people? The Taylor Swift tour.
Yes. Ding, ding, ding.
Because you could do something or not do it or whatever. And the March break stuff, you have to put your kid in something, so you kind of suck it up. But the Taylor Swift, it's like, wait a minute. People are spending $2,500 on a ticket to go see a concert. Not would I do that, but how is it even possible?
Yeah.
How is it even possible? Like, I would go to see AC/DC at Maple Leaf Gardens as a kid on the For Those About to Rock tour. Like, the ticket was what? $12? If it was really expensive, you go, shit, I'm going to save up and I'm going to throw. We're in the thousands now, Matt.
Yeah.
It's the resale. It's this and that. But to your point about, like, the cost, like, basically it's like a balloon. That's just like someone's let it go. It's a helium balloon and it's floating away. You can watch it for a while, but eventually it's going to be gone over the horizon. But none of these owners or leagues are going to care, because they'll be in their caskets with their team jerseys on. And it's just short-term thinking.
I understand it, because you are just trying to, you're just trying to win that quarter. You're trying to win that next quarter. You're not worried about 25, as you said, 25 years down the road. And, you know, it's like GMs who know, well, I'll be fired in 3 years anyway. Let me just sign this aging point guard, because who knows, maybe we'll go on a run in the playoffs this year.
So I'm, and I love this story as an angry one, because it ties into so many things that are making us angry at a gut level in our society right now.
It's just not fair. It's, everything just comes down to, this doesn't feel fair.
It's not fair, and it's not designed to be fair. We opted that we wanted freedom instead of fairness. That was the devil's bargain that we made within our society. And these people have the freedom to fuck you. Mm-hmm. So they do.
Now I'm just angry.
Yeah.
What's the next question?
Well, I was going to say the story that makes me angry is...
Yeah, what's yours?
It's only possible if it turns out that the F1 Red Bull story with Christian Horner, who's the team leader of Red Bull, which is like one of the most dynamic franchises in any league, in any sport in the world... But there was a woman who brought him up on allegations of improper behaviors around, you know, the workplace. And then he, you know, they did an inquiry. He was found to be not responsible of what this person said. And then they suspended the employee.
Oh.
Then they suspended the employee. And basically what Red Bull is saying now is, this is an internal matter and we won't talk about it. So I'm not angry now because I don't have the information. But if it turns out, because this guy's worth hundreds of millions of dollars to this organization. He is a fucking genius. He is the Bill Belichick of running an F1 team. And F1 is arguably the most of all, next to soccer, it's the most global sport.
Yes.
Right? So my dad, before all of this happened, said, oh, you mean future Prime Minister of England, Christian Horner? Because, you know, he's married to a Spice Girl and he's good looking and, you know, he's just brilliant, mm-hmm. you know? If it turns out that because he's worth so much to Red Bull that they sent a chill over their own company by suspending a person who made allegations of improper behaviors, that to me, I think, is reason to shut the whole team down.
Yeah, I mean, of course,
it's an if.
Yes, and that's the thing is the if it these allegations are true, because it's more the bigger picture, then it means the message is it gives powerful men within that company, they don't feel any sort of concern about their actions because they'll sort of be protected. And then any woman who has been abused or assaulted, they're going to be more scared to come up because they're going to lose their job and they're going to be seen in a negative light.
Wall Street bankers who knowingly committed fraud during the credit crisis of 2007, 2008, and the lead up to it. One dude from, I think, Deutsche Bank went and spent a little time in jail. So there's a lot of people who got incredibly fucking rich and broke the law and did it with absolute and utter impunity.
Yeah.
You know, people within our social media networks that we have now, Facebook and Instagram, that, you know, it's kind of like the NFL and concussions. It's like they know they're hurting people, but there's just too much money.
Yeah.
So they're just going to keep stonewalling and they'll never go to jail. If you don't go to jail for bad stuff, like Matt, what keeps you from doing bad things? The fear that if you get caught, there's going to be punishment. So to your point there, by the way, all of those, your story, my story is sort of cultural stuff. Sports angry. I'm just madder and madder about the first rounder that we sent to San Antonio for Jakob Pernik.
I know.
I'm just mad, like with every successive loss, and he's not even in the lineup. And if he was in the lineup, it doesn't even make that much of a difference. They're still pretty mediocre. They gave up a first.
It seems so dumb because it didn't fit within the calendar of who this team was, like where they were in terms of building. And here's the problem is I did this about a week or so ago before the start of March Madness. I actually started looking at mock NBA drafts.
Yeah, me too.
And I mean, I my time is all spent on the NFL side because the Giants have a high pick. And every time, you know, I get angry when the mock draft isn't someone I want, even though I've never seen that player play. I've just made up my mind who I want because, you know, I'm a psycho when it comes to this. My favorite was two of the top 10 players in March Madness, like not playing in the NCAA, not playing overseas. Two of them were like in the Kentucky's backcourt, and they were dog shit. And they
lost to Oakland.
They lost to Oakland.
Yeah, Reed Shepard.
Yeah, Reed Shepard. Really, and there was one other fella whose name I say on air all the time. Don't come to me for college basketball knowledge. You'll get none. But then I'm like, wait a minute. These were two guys that were projected to be in the top 10. And then I got angrier at the Jakob Pertl one because all my basketball time, or not all, a lot of it, when it is now watching to see, does Memphis win or lose? Does that help the Raptors' chances of keeping a top 6 pick, which is a lame way of consuming basketball, considering that they're some of the top players combined to score 13 points in a first-round loss. And now I'm like, nothing good. Nothing good is going to happen.
And you know what set me off about this?
Mm.
Bruce Brown's stat line the other night.
Yeah.
Because this, like, he didn't get dealt at the deadline.
Mm-hmm.
And his stats on a team that has literally no stars on it right now.
Oh, yeah.
No stars on it. And he's still putting up shit stats. Like, what are they going to trade him for in the offseason?
Oh, yes.
A second?
It felt like, oh, you could maybe get a late first or you could get something. This was a guy very valuable for Denver when they won the championship last year.
There was a good case to be made that you could get something nice for him. But, you know, Kelly Olynyk's fine.
He's fine.
And then Siakam puts up 32 points the other night. And I looked at that and I thought, how the fuck did this team mismanage this so bad? And then I thought about this. If, like, we're still litigating Dubas' deals from 8 years ago. If Kyle Dubas had done this Jakob Poeltl deal, he would be in protective custody right now.
Yeah, but there'd be the other half that would say this was the best deal ever, and the Pacers are actually the Pacers are actually only one game better percentage wise since they got Siakam versus before they got him. And OG Anunoby is again missing lots and lots of time with the New York Knicks. And I'm just saying this to try to make myself feel better as a Raptors fan, even though it all feels pretty hollow.
All right, let's get ready to fight, Matt. We've done anger. I want to go to confusion.
Yeah.
No. Let's park that one. I want to do disappointment here. And I want to do it not around sports, but I want to do it around food.
Mm-hmm.
Emotion number two.
Mm-hmm.
What is the most disappointing food?
This was so easy to answer because you sent me a text with a couple of these sort of quasi questions. Mm-hmm. And it's chicken. Chicken is the most disappointing food because you got to gussy it up to make it good. You got to surround it with other things. Often it's just kind of dry and bland. It's chicken.
All right. Here's why it's not chicken.
Okay.
And I like chicken,
mm-hmm.
but I also don't have high expectations. Mm-hmm. To me, it's a mid-round draft pick.
Mm-hmm.
If it turns into something pretty good, you're happy about it. If you get like a 12-year starter out of chicken, well, that's amazing. That's more than I expected, and there's lots of busts out there. You know what chicken is? Chicken is a game manager.
Chicken's a compromise.
It's not a compromise.
It is.
Chicken is Andre Iguodala.
Oh, that's an insult to Andre.
Good at a bunch of stuff, neither great nor bad at anything.
NBA Finals MVP, Andre Iguodala.
Think about how many delicious meals start with chicken, whether it's chicken wings, fried chicken in a buttermilk batter, mm-hmm. chicken cacciatore.
Uh-huh.
Like, I'm not saying on its own it's all that fantastic.
That's what I'm talking about.
But it's glue. It's Andre Iguodala. You don't build a champion meal out of chicken, but you can partner it with things.
But you've had it so... Chicken so many times has been the dinner. What are we having? We're having chicken and salad.
Matt, how many stars are there in the NBA?
Oh, stars? Real stars?
Yeah, or even just really great players.
Okay, let's go 25.
How many shit players are there?
Hundreds.
Right.
Yeah.
And how many okay players are there? Like, they're professionals. They'll play somewhere between 4 and 10 years.
The Matt Stairs of the NBA. He's a professional
the
hitter.
Matt Bonner.
The Matt Bonner.
Yeah, exactly. The Red Rocket. Well, you know what? Chicken is the Red Rocket. It's going to be on a lot of teams. It's going to be a valuable piece. It's Bruce Brown mm-hmm. before Bruce Brown at the end of this season for us. But it's just something you can move around and get value out of.
I never order chicken at a restaurant because I know I'll be disappointed because there's much better things on the menu.
Well, now I'm going to go to my most disappointing food and you're going to disagree.
All right.
The most disappointing food actually is scallops.
I'm not going to disagree with you because you know what's funny, Bob?
Mm.
That was the other choice I had in mind.
Really?
Yes, with scallops.
Interesting. Okay,
yeah.
But for different reasons though,
For much different reasons because of expectation management.
Because scallops have the reputation of being amazing and a luxury item and something you almost never have. So you would think, like, when you get lobster, you don't have lobster every day. You have lobster maybe a couple times a year, or at least most of us do.
Correct.
So when you have it, you want it to be delicious, which it is. King crab right now at the St. Lawrence Market is $99 a pound. But you know it's delicious.
Mm.
But here's the thing about scallops is more often than not, they're so hard to cook.
Yes.
That they're okay or bad. Like, it goes a bit like lamb, but even worse, where it goes from tasty, 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 no good. It just happens in like 30 seconds. You have to be so on it. And even when they are good, you see flashes of brilliance, but it's a bit like Trevor Lawrence.
Ooh, like it's often been said.
Yeah, like a first overall, where you go, this is going to be incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of okay. And you're like, did I not like this? No. Would I give up on it?
Well, Trevor Lawrence likes scallops. Let's stay here. Mm-hmm. Is if you undercook them, they're just squishy and they're not there.
If you overcook them, they're chewing a wallet.
And there's that middle ground. So Trevor Lawrence he's with Urban Meyer, dysfunction, shit.
That's the soggy scallop.
Soggy scallop. Urban Meyer goes away. Doug Peterson comes in. Oh my God, they're coming back in that second half win over the Chargers beating Justin Herbert. That's the scallop is just right. And then there is this year. It's like, Not as good.
This year, there was about a three-week window where people were like, are the Jags really figuring it out? Which is code for, is Trevor Lawrence really figuring it out?
Yeah.
Scalps are flashes of brilliance,
mm-hmm.
but just too many mistakes.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's true. And that's why scalps is going to be my other choice. I've just been overwhelmed by disappointing to meh chicken. So that's why I had chickens on my disappointment. But no, it is, scallops is, and also the problem with scallops, I do not recommend anyone buying them and cooking them unless they know what they're doing.
Yeah, it's a high degree of difficulty.
Yeah, it's the same thing. I remember once when Amy was away, I'm like, you know what?
It's like wearing pink.
Yeah.
You know, you can do it,
mm-hmm.
but you know, you have to figure out how to make this work for you so you don't look silly.
Or wearing a vest without the jacket. Like, I'm going to wear the vest.
You know what? You're right. It's not wearing pink. It's the vest on a suit.
Yes.
Cebulski, James Cebulski, my old partner on mm-hmm. TSN 1050 radio,
yep.
Used to walk around in three-piece suits all the time. It was kind of like his thing. And I remember thinking, I would look like a fat mortician.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a pocket watch away from being a sweaty old West sheriff.
Yes.
If I put on that vest.
I remember I was given a vest once for Christmas. This is when I was in my 20s. And I was going to go out. This is still a period, single, going to clubs. And I tried the button-down shirt with the vest over it. No suit jacket, just the vest. And I got to the front door. And I looked in the mirror. And the mirror looked back. And we were like, who the fuck are you kidding? And then I just took the vest off. I never wore it again. I know, I didn't. I never wore it. It was given to me as a gift, and I never wore it.
You know it's serious business when you don't even try again.
Oh, no. No, it was one time. But yeah, the final thought, I once bought like a really good piece of cod, you know, that black cod, like just, and I'm going to cook this. And I cooked it at home, and it was fine. And I'm like, well, that was a $38 mistake by me. Because I tried, and there's a certain foods, do not do unless you know what you're doing.
So true. We're going to go over some more emotions later that are a bit more angsty, but I want to do happy right now.
Yep.
And happy to me is an amazing emotion because I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I mean by that is I am capable of joy. I am capable of love, but I am not someone who wakes up every day and I can find the cloud behind a silver lining.
That's a good way of putting it.
I was hearing Scott Galloway, who does this podcast that I really like. I was talking about ketamine and doing ketamine and how it opened him up. And, you know, this is something that's one. It starts in Silicon Valley, as all stupid things do. And then when it becomes $20,000 less expensive, normal people start doing it. And
right.
Maybe it becomes a thing. Maybe it doesn't. But I was like, ketamine. Okay, interesting. Elon Musk, bad. But, you know, I've seen my mom come out of surgery with it and she seemed pretty happy. So, okay, put a pin in it. But here's what I'm getting at, Matt, and here's my question around happy. I could use ketamine. You are ketamine. You are the happiest person I know.
Yeah.
I've never met anyone in my entire life that just seems so naturally good at being happy. So my question is, Matt Cause, what is your happy secret?
Couple things, and I'll do this fast. One,
take your time.
Well, no,
I need to get notes down.
At some point, you know, you feel weird when you're talking about yourself too much. And I know that sounds weird coming from me because I am my own favorite subject. But I would say first, the luck side, being born just with good parents, enough money where we went to Florida once a year and every now and then like a crazy trip. But not enough money where you're sent to boarding school and you can get like fucked up when you have like too much money. And sometimes having lots and lots of money can spoil you and can spoil your character. So I was in that sweet spot. I was in that scallop spot.
So you weren't broke and you weren't one of the kids from the holdovers.
There you go. Yeah, okay. Exactly. I was never getting picked up in a helicopter, but I once paid for a helicopter trip, hour long trip over Grand Canyon in 2000. It was much cheaper back then. I would say a couple things. The one I always mention is because I have this crippling fear of death, the other side of it is enjoy life because you don't know how much time you have. And not in a manic, manufactured way, in a, okay, screw it. Let's just try to enjoy this day. Let's just try to enjoy this moment. Let's find the joy. Because life's too short. So let's laugh and some of it is repressing negative thoughts, because who wants to live in negative thoughts? I think so the death side is a part of it, yes.
No, I'm not asking a question, I'm raising my hand. You said, who wants to live in negative thoughts?
And then there's Bob putting his hand up. Yeah.
You threw it out to the crowd, which is me, and the answer is one of one.
So I think also I was just weirdly, I always kind of knew myself. I knew what, like at a young age, I knew what made me happy. I knew I didn't have a lot of angst. I didn't have a lot of trying to figure it out. I knew the stuff that made me happy. And I always went and went after it. Like as a kid, I loved movies. And in that state today, I love performance. And then eventually I'm like, wait a minute. Okay, I might not be an actor. But then I got into radio, and radio is performance. And I treat my show every day like it's a performance. I write a script. I write a monologue, you know, which is in some ways is there's a certain level of narcissism with that. I'm going to talk for 7 straight minutes. Though all those sort of things just thrown in together.
Matt, you did something incredibly rare. You did the triple cliche. And I mean cliche only in the sense that we could call it the triple Lindy of wisdom.
Ooh, there it is.
Seize the day.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Know yourself.
Yeah.
Live in the moment.
Shit, you're right.
If I was like, oh mentally, my God. I was trying to catalog everything as fast as I could because you were throwing observation after observation. I was like, okay, so what he's really saying here is seize the day. Life is short, seize the day.
Yeah.
But then even within doing that, live in the moment. Try to understand and appreciate the little details of your life and really let them sink in. And then when you said know yourself, I thought, holy fuck. Like he's like Socrates right now.
To thine own self be true, which again was not said by Hamlet. Am I John Tavares? Like,
oh my God. Why is the answer yes?
Oh.
Let's pull this apart. Because when you asked me that, I thought, yes, but I'm not sure why.
Oh, that you're right. That was just all cliches. I didn't even mean
no,
it.
No, but not cliches. Wisdom.
Wisdom.
As you've always said about cliches, they're cliches because in some sense, they're true.
Yeah, now I want to give a new answer. Heroin. My love of snuff films and
wow.
I'm trying to think of something the exact opposite.
We were on the super happy fun slide and then it just turned into the Sarlacc pit.
Sit down, let me tell you about Driller Killer.
Driller Killer. What? How could you go from I'm so happy to Driller Killer in 30 seconds?
Yeah, I want to thank my parents for my undergrad theater degree. You're right. It is just sort of those wisdom building blocks that are there.
But you actually do them. My Sandra was listening to the pod the other day. We were in the car and I played it for her. And she says, you rip them a lot less now that you've gone back. And I didn't tell her the real reason. It's because he won. Like for 20 years, I was like, Matt, you idiot. Matt, you dummy. And then finally, I got to a point where it was like, you know what? He's actually right.
I wore you down. I'm like water. You give water a million years, it'll eventually seep through. It'll eventually seep through everything. Speaking of the anger, my favorite moment ever when you were angry at me was you told the story in the pod a couple of years ago.
Okay.
I don't know what was going on. Something very negative. You were in the hospital. Not you were the person that.
I was visiting someone.
You were visiting someone in the hospital and you were looking on Instagram. And there was some posts by me and it was a bottle of wine and it was just me being me. And I remember you like showed it to Sandra and just, I forget the whole quip of the story, but it's a nice contrast between what you were going through versus I was going through and you're basically, you asshole.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember Matt, I remember Sandra looking at me and going, what's with Matt and these fucking sunsets?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the opposite, that's great, Matt. So just to recap. Seize the day because life is short. Live in the moment because life is filled with beautiful details.
Yeah.
And know yourself.
One other little
build
one.
Your life. Oh, okay.
One other little one.
A quadruple cliche.
Try not to sabotage yourself. I think a lot of times people are afraid to be happy because when you're happy, you open yourself up to feeling to be
disappointment.
Disappointment. And the happier you feel, then it can lead to more emotional crush. I always hate the idea of oh no, don't expect anything good, and then everything will just be nice surprises. And that's fine, but that means you're setting the bar so low for your life. And it may be easier for me to say that because I have a good life. But just don't self-sabotage. Don't be afraid of happy.
All right. Well, this is a good segue to the next one, which is the next emotion, which is going to be worry. Matt, you try not to worry.
Yeah.
But you are a sports fan.
Mm-hmm.
So it is part of the deal.
Yeah.
Once in a while, you got to worry. What worries you? What team? What athlete? What story? What makes you most worried?
The Blue Jays.
Okay.
It's the Blue Jays because they have been so underwhelming for, you know, what feels like a year now. The offseason brought us nothing. We don't know when Kevin Gausman's coming back. We don't know what's going on with Manoah. Their two best bullpen guys have tightness, soreness, and this and that. Vlad was battling a little nicks and bruises here and there. And having a bad baseball team is the worst because there's 162 of those games. And especially, you can have a bad hockey or basketball team, but there's other things going on in sports.
It's a great point. The thing about baseball is it is the great innings eater of the summer.
Yeah.
Now, you can be a CFL fan. Once you get to midsummer, you know, the games start to come in. They're not meaningful, but they're there.
And by the way, only once a week. And because it isn't the CFL, the top six teams make the playoffs. So there isn't the same level of stakes.
NFL's training camp starts up in earnest. You start getting preseason games sometime in August, but nobody cares about them. So there's that great stretch, that expanse of time, where when your baseball team is good, it's so fun because it's night after night of enjoying them. And when they suck, there is nothing else to do.
Yeah. And that's my big concern, where now it's going to be, oh, what's Ricky Tiedemann going to do? And will this be the year? Will Nate Pearson finally live up to being one of the top prospects? And the problem is everything is about it's the same people, but we just ask the same people to be better.
I don't think the Jays are a great team. I think that best case scenario, they're competitive. It's just the Yankees got better.
Baltimore got a Cy Young pitcher.
Yeah, like just our division, this is the same story for the last 25 years. Our division is super hard, and we didn't really do a lot to get better, and some of the questions we have got worse. So here's what I don't want. I don't want them to just be out of it by mid-May. That's what I really don't want. Because at least if they're hanging on and it's July and there's competitive games and if they go on a run, they could make the wild card, that is still fun. But we've seen this with this team before over the years, where baseball is 162 games, but if you fuck up the first 40 good enough, you're done.
Yeah.
It's a bit like the NFL that way, right? Like you can be 1-4 and your season's pretty much done unless you're Buffalo, which we'll get to in a minute.
Thank God for the expanded playoffs, because at least it your window of relevance, maybe it's artificially, gets expanded a little bit longer. The worst case scenario is we're talking ourselves into, well, what about the Diamondbacks? They won like 87-6 games and then they got to the World Series. Like if there's Arizona Diamondback references throughout this year, that means it's been a bad year.
Yeah, this is how I would categorize the Jays right now. They haven't played one game and we're already saying there's still time to turn it around.
God.
You know who worries me the most right now?
Yeah, who?
It's weird. It's the Leafs, but not because of who they are. I'm worried because I'm actually not worried. And I'm kind of confused by this.
Oh, you're worried about apathy.
Yeah. See, here's the thing. Most marriages don't end because of fights. They end because of apathy. Fights can be solved, but it's very hard to solve a problem if you don't care if it gets solved or not. You know, you and I have lived the cycle. Like sports, loving sports is like a good marriage in the sense that there's chapters. There's good ones. There's bad ones. There's times you think I can't do this anymore. There's times you think there's nothing else I'd rather do. And it's a story that stretches out over decades. But the point is, you never don't care. You are always invested. You're happy. You're sad. You're this. You're that. Here's where I'm getting at. Like the Leafs had a big weekend. Certainly a very interesting one.
Yeah, they're
playing Edmonton and then the next night against Carolina. And I didn't give a shit. I didn't give a shit, Matt. I can't remember the last time that you would have had them play two opponents of that potential, you know, significance, at least symbolically, and not care what the outcome is. They're going to make the playoffs. They're going to be in third. They're going to play whoever's in second.
Boston or Florida.
And then we're going to be in exactly the same spot we've been in for the last 7 years. And I've been disappointed. And just, you know, you talked about the water and the slow erosion over time. I am worried about the Leafs because I am not worried about the Leafs.
And yeah, that is the single worst thing. It is the single, that's my concern about the Blue Jays. I'm filled with apathy. Season's starting. I'm like, I don't care. As for the Maple Leafs, by the way, it's funny. We are definitely in a malaise. And I was thinking about it this morning. I was reading Jonas Siegel, The Athletic, Monday morning Leafs report. And it was a lot about Nick Robertson. And I'm like, all right.
And what he said? Or
is he going to be in the lineup? Sure, he can score a goal, but a lot of mistakes. And just all the things that were being discussed. I'm like, I don't care. And then the debate about, Travis Yost of TSN was looking at the four Canadian teams that are going to make the playoffs. And it was Wall versus Samsonov. And the answer is Wall's better, but Samsonov is more experienced. Who's it going to be? I'm like, I don't know. And yeah, they're like, it's funny. I'm actually not doing my show today. And quietly, I'm kind of happy because today would have been a work day. Today would have absolutely been a work day. Again, unless Ohtani says something you're crazy. But yeah, I feel there is a level of apathy that's surrounding it. And all that we can hope for is a couple hours before the start of game one of the playoffs, that apathy is destroyed.
All right, so let's move to confusion because we're probably running out of time soon, right?
Oh, let's see. We've got 12 minutes.
Okay, so I've got two more to do. And the last one's going to take some time.
Okay.
So let's just quickly do
confusion.
Confusion.
Yeah.
Who's the most confusing team to you?
It's a little bit of Golden State Warriors and the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Good picks.
Golden State Warriors, they could miss the playoffs. Houston could catch them. And Steph Curry's had a really good year, and some of their young guys are playing well. But then everything wrong with Andrew Wiggins or Draymond Green or this or that. But they might miss the playoffs. But the big one is the Pittsburgh Penguins. I tell you the Penguins are missing the playoffs. You're like, oh, well, all their stars who are old, they must be injured. Nope. They've missed almost no time. Well, they must not be performing. Nope, Crosby's been great. Malkin's doing well. Letang's there every night. Oh, there's Carlson. And they're not going to make the playoffs. Like, they to me are such a confusing team.
I would say the LA Chargers, because they have a quarterback.
Yep.
They every year put together a team that on paper seems to be pretty darn good. And they manage to lose in spectacular fashion. Not dramatic fashion, but just like, every single year, they find ways to pull defeat from the jaws of victory.
Yes.
How
have you had 4 years of Justin Herbert on a rookie contract deal, and you're basically like a game under 500 with him? Like, that is a spectacular waste of resource. Yes. The Chargers are a confusing one because they're also a team that everyone, loves. Or, oh, look out. This is the year of the Chargers. And it hasn't been.
The Carolina Hurricanes are that team for me in the NHL. Look out. Here come the Hurricanes. For me, though, it's the Bills. And this is partially because I am a Bills enthusiast.
Yes, you are.
But also, the nature of conversations are so weird around the Bills. It's not just that they seem to be overperforming or underperforming on any given week, in that the last 3 or 4 years, no one can say with any certitude, this is who this team is, because they will literally go out and within 3 weeks look different than they do right now. They were out of it last year. Then all of a sudden they were the hottest team. Then they lose again. But it's the conversation around guys like Josh Allen. Like, Josh Allen, at any point in the NFL season, is either being called underrated or the second best quarterback in the game. Can you think of any other sport where someone could credibly say that guy is the second best in the entire league, therefore the world, at his position, but here's all the things he has to fix?
Mm-hmm. No, because there's more scrutiny on the quarterback than any other position in sport. So no, the quarterback is in its own world when it comes to how they're assessed about being good or bad. And then we fight about our wins, a quarterback stat, and then we fight about this and that and the other thing. And so, yeah, no, you're right, where Josh Allen at some point is now the best player, and then at other points it's like, I can't trust him come the playoffs.
Sean McDermott,
mm-hmm,
at various times is the inspirational coach and defensive mastermind that,
yep,
somehow managed to pull Buffalo out of its years in the desert and has created a winning culture, and we should fire him.
Yes.
Because that guy just can't win. So he created a winning culture, but he just can't win. How does that work, Matt? Because to me, that's textbook confusing.
That's what happens when you have Patrick Mahomes in your division.
Maybe it is just that simple. But Stephon Diggs and Josh Allen, oh, that's one of the top three receiver quarterback pairings in all of the league.
Uh-oh, they hate each other.
They hate each other.
Yeah. Oh, but they love each other, yeah.
But they're the best,
yeah,
but they hate each other. And Diggs wants out.
Yeah. Oh, no, Diggs says he wants to be there. Oh, but Trayvon Diggs is saying get him out. Yeah, yeah.
Every cliche in the NFL, you apply it to the Buffalo Bills, and you can look at it in two exactly different ways?
That has to be so tiring for you. And honestly, and any Buffalo Bills fan, Jesus.
you don't know whether to be happy or sad. Or
do you think part of it is the geography, that there's just a lot more Bills coverage here and there's more Bills fans? Like if we were doing this pod and we were in Portland, but you were still a Bills fan, do you think emotionally it would still be as much of a yo-yo? Or do you think because if you're a little bit further away from the whole machine, it might feel different?
Well, certainly I care more about it. And I think objectively, like the LA Chargers are, like, I don't care much about the Chargers.
Mm-hmm.
They're in the West.
Yeah.
You know, they were only the LA Chargers because they stopped being San Diego. Going back to the angry thing again.
Yeah.
So, yeah, obviously there's proximity bias. But at the same time, I just, like, I'm pretty attuned to the narratives of sports, having covered it for 20 years. And all the narratives I see in the NFL, I can apply to the Bills. On any given week, look at them totally differently.
I think it goes back to food and expectation management. We've seen them at the best. And at their best, they lost. That game against Kansas City, 13 seconds left. And that's actually, that was the moment where Sean McDermott stopped creating culture, positive culture.
That was the moment?
That was the moment when, I don't know, the kickoff, whatever they did, they allowed three plays and the field goal, they go to overtime. But because we saw the best version, and we're like, oh, that quarterback with that offense or that coach, oh, they can win the Super Bowl. And then everything, they just got the rug pulled under them. So I think a lot of it's expectation management.
Yeah, I can still see Travis Kelce cutting across the field and just
wide
thinking,
open.
This is going to happen. This is going to happen.
Yep.
Well, you know, this is a good setup for the last emotion.
All right.
I want to do sadness,
mm-hmm.
but I want to do sadness specifically about movies, because there's something interesting about a really sad movie. What is the saddest movie you've ever seen?
The saddest of all time? That one's going to take more time to figure out. You know, and as a kid, I remember in tears in Dead Poets Society.
Okay.
But recently, it's the movie, and it was recently, Christ, it's like probably 7-8 years old, Arrival. That movie always gets me because the protagonist, she knows, if it's a time loop thing, but she knows if she gets together with him and they're going to have a daughter, daughter's going to die. She knows it, and she still does it. When I watch that movie, and I see it over and over.
Are you tearing up now?
I'm actually getting a little emotional thinking
You're
about
tearing
it.
Up
I was
now.
Watching the other day. But it's so well done. And I just want, it's such a beautiful movie, and it's Villeneuve at its best. So that one recently will always get me. Or if I see a lot of great moments of Robin Williams, that'll make me sad because, you know, just how his life ended. And just this was a guy that always made us happy.
So it's not necessarily the movie, but it's the feeling you bring to the movie because you love the guy.
Yeah, yeah. So it's great moments from Robin Williams.
So Arrival and Mrs. Doubtfire, the two saddest movies.
Okay, not Mrs. Doubtfire. How dare you? Let's at least go with the one where he won the Oscar.
All right, so I'm going to roll through a couple here, and I'll just get your reaction to them. Oh, actually, I have another question after this. I don't know if we'll have time, but The English Patient for me was pretty damn sad, but I was also going through a bad breakup, so I don't know if I can say it was just the film.
Right, that'll do it.
Holy shit, though. Wandered around the parking lot behind the cinema for like half an hour bawling afterwards.
Yep.
I think there may have been more at play there.
Yeah.
E.T.?
Mm-hmm.
As a kid, when you think E.T.'s dead, holy shit, those were some big tears. Do you remember the movie The Champ with John Voight?
Of course. I was just thinking, Rick, Champ! Oh my God.
Champ, come back! Oh my God, now I'm going to tear up.
Yeah.
Holy shit, as a kid. So the boxer, he's laid out on the slab. He fights that last fight for his boy and dies. Sorry, spoiler alert. But
it's a
1979 film, so.
I cried in Return of the Jedi.
Really?
Yes.
At which point? When Jabba dies?
No. How dare you? Jabba, come back. I made sure you were a slave trading spice dealer, but I'm just assuming you're a spice dealer to the desert. Isn't everything spice dealing? When Darth Vader, because Darth Vader's finally good at the end, and then he dies and he saves Luke.
Oh, and you cried at Han Solo dying, right?
I won't lie. There was a little, you got a little teary eyed there with Han Solo.
I'm going to go Brian Song, mm-hmm. one of the saddest movies I've ever made. If you ever get a chance to see it, it's, I forget who plays, there's Gale Sayers, who's played by Billy Dee Williams.
Yeah.
Forget who plays
James
Brian.
Conn.
Hello, James Conn. Thank you. That was a weeper. West Side Story. Now, it's not a sad movie, but the ending of West Side Story, the original version, not the Spielberg remake, but I have seen that movie. This is no bullshit. I've probably seen it 2 to 3 dozen times, and I have never not cried at the ending.
Holocaust movies, I don't know if we can include
Schindler's List.
Well, Schindler's List, but no, Schindler's List was just overwhelming. It's almost like being sad wasn't enough. I was going to go more with
Life
is Beautiful. I remember my girlfriend at the time, this was hard as nails, girl, where her friends hated her because they'd all be watching some movie and they'd all be crying, and Shannon would be making fun of them for crying. We got out of the theater and in the car just in tears. So, but I don't know. So life is beautiful.
All right. I'm going to throw just a couple quick ones. Yeah. Not a sad movie at all, but the first 5-minute opening of Up, the silent opening.
Oh my God. Yes.
It's just heartbreaking.
No.
Watership Down, the old one, was very sad. And also, I know this sounds ridiculous after all these heavy movies, but for me, I never cried more than when I was a kid and I watched Snoopy Come Home, because Snoopy got lost. And I still remember my grandmother trying to console me because I was convinced that Charlie and Snoopy were separated forever. And it was like my first moment where I'm like watching something. You know, people have had this reaction to Bambi. Mm-hmm. The first time you're watching something and something really sad happens, you're like, what just happened?
Yeah.
My world is ending. I love Charlie. I love Snoopy. They're apart. It was welcome to adulthood, Bob. Snoopy came home. Sometimes he doesn't.
One weird one. Mm-hmm. I remember my dad would put on old World War II movies. Mm-hmm. There was one like The Bridge Too Far, where it doesn't work out for the Allies. And I just remember being like very sad. I remember being sad in that one as well.
So we'll end on a happy note, though. Who's the funniest person in sports?
Funny. I think it's Charles Barkley.
That's funny.
I think in the end, like I think I'm gonna go Charles Barkley because he has the camaraderie, but also he has all the pieces. He's Ernie Johnson, the straight man. He's got Shaq, the fool he can play off of. Kenny Smith is somewhere roaming in between. It's the perfect comedic infrastructure. So it's set up for Barkley to succeed, and Barkley more often than not succeeds.
I would say yes, except for one thing, the SNL test. He wasn't funny on SNL. Removed from his comfort zone, he couldn't do comedy, which is why my pick is Peyton Manning. Because Peyton Manning was good on SNL. He wasn't Alec Baldwin good.
He wasn't
John Hamm good, but he was actual real actor good.
Mm-hmm.
Like he was like an actor who went on and did a good job, but he's also a two-time MVP, you know, Super Bowl winning champion. And his NFL broadcasts, the Monday Nighters, he's really funny. He's genuinely clever. See, Charles is entertaining and hilarious in a kind of a John Candy way where he just does, you know.
Johnny Roo's beef and booze.
Yeah, exactly. He's just a big, lovable guy.
Yeah.
Not to denigrate Candy. He's a genius, obviously. But Peyton is like funny. He's really, really funny. So, yeah. And he belittles Eli, which I think deep down is what you don't like about him, because Eli is clearly second banana to Peyton.
We're out of time, but I could show you why Eli is actually the funnier of the two Mannings.
There's no way. Or maybe next time.
Yeah, maybe next time. Yeah. Well, you know, I mean.
Well, I'm the Peyton, you're the Eli. So, of course, you would think that.
Yeah. I did better in the playoffs than you did.
Yeah, but everybody acknowledged me as the
as the
tormented leader.
I know. See, this one now would go back to all the emotions of anger and sadness and happiness, having the Peyton versus Eli.
And as we discovered in this podcast, your keys to happiness, you did a quadruple cliche axle, which is almost impossible. And deep down, I admitted the most important secret I've ever admitted on this podcast, which is I stopped ripping you so much because you won.
And my secret to happiness? Get pucks deep.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.